Season 6 of the Missing Witches podcast is sponsored, in part, by Foxglove Farm. Go to Foxglove Farm, that's farm with a PH, like pharmacy, .com and use offer code MISSINGWITCHES when you sign up for your monthly subscription box of witchy delights. And sponsored by listeners like you. You who join our Patreon and come to our coven meetings. You who buy our book. Recommend it to your friends and review it online. We thank you. And if you love this episode, tip us at paypal.me/missingwitches.
You aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch. You must be a witch.
In this story, we have to push past the settler faces dynamited into sacred ground to get to the missing history of real American heroes. Real witches whose names aren't told in school, but whose magic has shifted the culture we inhabit. Hidden, moving in shadows and behind the scenes. Today we'll meet Lozen, a warrior, healer, and prophet of the Cheyenne Chiricahua Apache who, when the Indian Removal Act was passed in the USA in 1830, was a 10-year-old girl whose power and difference was already beginning to show. Here's what I want you to know about Lozen right from the jump. She is said to have had a psychic ability, that she was gifted. But when we work very, very hard, learn, commit, and sacrifice, do we call a return on that energetic investment a gift? Or did we earn it? By me, Lozen was not gifted. She earned her power in ways I'll tell you about, but keep in mind as you listen to her story from beginning to end, your witch power is not a gift that you either receive or don't. We don't wake up on Christmas morning to find it under a festive tree. It isn't in an envelope delivered by an owl. Your power is a wage you earn when you put in the work. It is a birthright, but it is activated by your learning and your labor. Much of the information I gathered on Lozen's life comes from Warrior Woman, The Story of Lozen, Apache Warrior and Shaman by Peter Alishire. As one reviewer on Goodreads noted, the book is written by white eyes, but it's better than nothing at all. And I think that's how Risa and I feel when we tell these stories. We go looking for the lives we didn't know about, the names we hadn't heard in school. Not to become authorities, but to learn for ourselves and pass these tidbits on to you, our Missing Witches Coven. We are trying to know better. Like Maya Angelou said, when you know better, you do better. And that, for us, like the Goodreads reviewer wrote, is better than nothing at all. Lozen was born in late 1840 within sight of the Sacred Mountain near Ojo Caliente, Spanish for hot eyes, one of the oldest natural health resources in the United States. The area is home to hallowed hot springs where legend states that a Tewa hero once accessed the underworld via the warm water. The hot springs' varying temperatures and mineral contents mean that these pools are not just holy, but healing. So, of course, this spot is now a resort and spa, created around a bathhouse built in the 1800s by a territorial representative to Congress. In 2020, a fire at the spa destroyed the historic bathhouse, but it's rebuilt and reopened now for a soak to, as the ad states, heal yourself, body and soul, with a retreat to Ojo. If you can afford it. Colonial capitalism is like tinnitus, a constant ringing in our ears, a ceaseless high-pitched frequency that demands to be heard above all else. We go looking for sacred stories and find a holy spot where our connection to nature, our bodies and souls, and to the spirits of the land is bought and sold. Holy places with ticket prices. Regarding Mount Rushmore, in the Treaty of 1868, the U.S. government promised the Sioux territory that included its site, the Sacred Black Hills, in perpetuity. Perpetuity lasted only until gold was found in the mountains. We've talked a lot on the podcast about how our treatment of women is echoed in our treatment of the land, how capitalism, exploitation, and prejudice require each other, how it's all linked. And these links are perhaps most clearly visible when we note what Aaron Wise calls the frightening way fossil fuels and violence against Native women are connected. She writes, "A boom in the oil industry had introduced many small towns to an influx of non-Native male pipeline workers. This caused the ratio of men to women in said communities to change drastically. On average, the ratio is around 10 to 1, and in some places it can be as high as 20 to 1. As Christine Nobis of Ceding Sovereignty has previously written, the rise of violent crime is directly coincident with the oil boom. It may not be obvious to non-Native people, but the health and safety of Native American people is directly linked to the health and safety of our land." Aaron drops some statistics. According to the U.S. Government Accountability Office, U.S. attorneys reportedly declined 50% of the indigenous cases deferred to them between 2005 and 2009, of which 67% were sexual abuse and rape-related. 70% of violent victimizations experienced by indigenous peoples are not committed by persons of the same race, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. Attempted suicide has been reported by more than 20% of girls surveyed. Aaron concludes the essay by saying, "A catastrophic web has been woven between extractive industries and Native communities, and we are each called upon to observe issues of broader concern. It is evident now, more than ever, that extractive industries are having disproportionate adverse effects on Indigenous peoples, particularly on the well-being of Native women. The continued desecration of unceded Indigenous territories and sacred resources resulting from extraction projects have contributed to disease, birth defects, reproductive health issues, and delayed early childhood development among many community members. More attention needs to be given to Indigenous women living near points of extraction. This is the land we inherited from our ancestors. We are still here, intrepid and indigenous, and we are moving forward." Christine Nobis said, "Our stories about colonial violence and environmental destruction are key to moving forward in the fight to stop the systemic destruction of our environment." See, witches, the universe operates in patterns, webs, connections. You can think of it literally or metaphorically, but we are the earth. Lozen's power, in my view, wasn't so much that she was psychic, but that she was listening. Connected to the earth to such a degree that it sent her messages. The Apaches did not refer to themselves as Apache. This was a word that translated to enemy in Zuni and was later adopted by the Spanish. Apaches instead referred to themselves with variants of Ende, meaning the people. The name Lozen was an Ende war title, meaning one who has stolen horses in a raid. This reminded me of a German turn of phrase, a compliment. Jemand mit denem fjernem stehlen kann. It refers to someone who is reliable, trustworthy, a friend with whom you can do something extraordinary, difficult, or crazy. Someone who is game for everything. Literally translated, somebody with whom you can steal horses. And Lozen was all that. Strong, loyal, and trustworthy. Someone you could steal horses with. Her brother Victorio called her his right hand in battle, saying she was strong as a man but braver than most, and cunning in strategy. He said, "Lozen is a shield to her people." Of course, it helped that she had the ability to detect the movement of her enemies. According to legend, Lozen would stretch out her arms with her palms facing the sky. Then she would follow the sun, praying to Usen, the Ende creator of life. When she felt a tingling in her hands, and when her palms darkened, Lozen would know the direction from which her enemies were coming. But before she came into her power, Lozen came of age. By 7, she had demonstrated her proficiency with horses, her ability to win foot races and keep up with not only the boys, but with her tribal leaders. Alishire wrote, "At first, Lozen was like many other girls. She gathered the firewood, waited to eat until her father and her uncles were finished, and spent long hours with the women preparing the food. She chewed sinew, tanned buckskin, gathered food, and she thought often that she would like to become an apprentice to a warrior. She learned the names of all the places around the Ojo Caliente and up on the sacred mountain, each hill, outcropping, spring, stream, cluster of trees and canyon had a name given to it by the first people. She traveled along with her mother, her father, her uncles, and Nana whenever she could, hoping they would tell her the stories of the naming of each place. Each story taught a lesson. Because everyone knew all the stories, they could make almost any point by bringing up the right places, all without ever offering a direct criticism to wound a person's pride. Nana said she must learn all of the place names she could and remember each story. Nana explained that Lozen must go to these places and sit there a long while and listen. These places would know she was listening. The places themselves could correct one's thinking, and they would help her to smooth out her mind, to let go of fear and emotion and ego and self-importance. Only places could impart the calm, focus, and attention that came with wisdom. Lozen yearned for wisdom so she might serve her people. So she eagerly sought the names of every place she encountered and traveled constantly about the Ojo Caliente and up and down the sacred mountain, repeating the names of each place and sitting quietly for hours at a time to let the wisdom of those places soak into her. Soon, it was time for Lozen's sunrise ceremony. A quick note, for over 70 years, the sunrise ceremony was banned by the U.S. government, as were most of Native spiritual practices and rituals. With the American Indian Religious Freedom Act of 1978, the sunrise ceremony could openly be practiced on reservations again. But it is impossible to even imagine the devastation of your sacred, ancient, ancestral traditions being taken and criminalized. The 4-day ceremony that Lozen passed through marked a girl's transition into womanhood, acknowledging the power of her blood. Each of the 96 hours is filled with specific prayers, songs, dances, the painting of faces, and the testing of resolve. These 4 days were followed by 4 more days of meditation. Alishire wrote, "Lozen remained in prayer, like a dream, and when the full 4 days of meditation had passed, she got up, taking nothing but a water skin, and went up to the sacred mountain. She found a place that seemed right to her and sat alone, not eating, barely moving, hoping for a vision." Alishire describes how days passed. The sun rose and set. Lozen began to feel despair. No vision was coming. All she could hear was the crow. All she could see were the clouds. And then she realized that this despair as well is a form of pride. And so she returned to listening. She waited, patiently, for her power. Alishire wrote, "Power pervades all things. It is the animating force in everything, the life force. In this sense, everything is alive, even the rocks and the wind." And so, finally, power spoke to her. She saw visions. A horse came to her and spoke to her, saying she should have horse power. The horse carefully and tenderly taught her a song. "The sun's horse is a yellow stallion. His nose, the place above his nose, is of haze. His ears, of the small lightning, are moving back and forth. He has come to us. The sun's horse is a yellow stallion, a blue stallion, a black stallion, the sun's horse has come to us. This song would give her power over horses and an understanding of them and the ability to heal anyone who was affected by horse sickness or injured by a horse. She also saw other things and heard other voices, things about which she did not speak again, and that she did not describe, nor question, nor ever forget. She told Victorio and Nana she had been given a ceremony to locate the enemy. She had been told she must stand in a clear space and sing the song she had been given. If an enemy was near, she would feel his presence in the heat on her palms when she faced the direction from which the enemy would come. The greater the heat of her hands, the closer the enemy. She sang the song. Upon this earth, on which we live, Usen has power. This power is mine. For locating the enemy, I search for that enemy, which only Usen the Great can show me. And Lozen's people needed her. The Indian Removal Act was being enforced as Lozen was coming into her power. And as Alishire wrote, the White Eyes had come. Among the people, everything depended on the character of a man. But who could know how it stood with the White Eyes? The Nantans said they could not make a decision themselves, bound by the promises written down on paper, which seemed almost like witchcraft. Let's take a look at one of those promises written on papers, the Indian Removal Act. Some trivia, Davy Crockett, who I didn't even know was a congressman and not just King of the Wild Frontier, voted against the Indian Removal Act, stating that his decision would, quote, not make me ashamed in the day of judgment. The Indian Removal Act was signed into law on May 28, 1830, by United States President Andrew Jackson, who appears on the American $20 bill. Quick reminder that he was set to be replaced by Harriet Tubman, but nah, right?
Ad break! And
ad break, witches!
These ad breaks are sponsored by Missing Witches! You know, we love you if you love us and you want to support us. There are lots of ways that you can do that. One of my personal favorites is our Patreon. There's always something going on the message board there, but specifically we do a monthly chat with those of our patrons who choose to join us. And it has been so rewarding for me, Risa. I think you can say the same thing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I just come join us. You'll see. You'll just be like, oh, I knew when I started listening to this podcast that I found my witch best friends and there must be like a badass gang of them out there gathering somewhere in the dark. And you were right. And it's on Patreon. And our Patreon is pay what you can. So it's not like there's a tiered system or whatever. You know, if you can afford $1 a month or whatever else, we will welcome you with open arms. And yeah, our Patreon circles, we just learn from each other and they're rad and you should come.
Yeah. And another excellent and exciting and thrilling to even say out loud way that you can support us is by buying our book, Missing Witches.
Oh yeah.
You can get a paper copy if you're like me and you like to fuck a book up when you read it with a lot of
same hard know, same.
Yeah, I like to dog ear. I have like a sigil system that I use to annotate my books, but also like a lot of times it just has to be an ebook because I know I'm gonna want to search things. You know, sometimes I like an ebook. Also, it's available as an audiobook, which Risa and I narrated ourselves. There are musical versions of the carols. Those are two great ways you can support us: through Patreon, through buying our book. You can review our book on your podcast, on your blog, on your social media, on Goodreads, on Amazon. And if you really love this episode, you can tip us at PayPal, paypal.me/missingwitches.
So the Indian Removal Act mandated the forced displacement of thousands and thousands and thousands of Indigenous people, removing them from the land that they had inhabited for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, to extract resources, get paid. We call part of this story the Trail of Tears, but we could equally call it the Trail of Blood, the Trail of Oil, the Trail of Gold, the Trail of Greed. Of course, many tribes fought back, and Lozen's was one of them. She rode alongside her brother Victorio. Lozen was an expert strategist and military leader, but she also had a determination and a courage that inspired the people around her. James Kowakla, a child at the time, remembers riding behind his grandmother as the band fled and fought American forces. Coming up against the Rio Grande, they were frozen, terrified to cross the torrent. "I saw a magnificent woman on a beautiful horse," he said. "Lozen, sister of Victorio. Lozen, the woman warrior." High above her head, she held her rifle. There was a glitter as her right foot lifted and struck the shoulder of her horse. He reared, then plunged into the torrent. She turned his head upstream and he began swimming. Once Lozen had led the people across the river, she returned to battle. A nurturer and defender. And because she was deeply connected to the earth, she possessed a wealth of knowledge about the medicinal properties of plants and minerals, making her a renowned medicine woman and healer as well. Some have speculated that part of the reason that Lozen isn't as well known as names like Geronimo or Crazy Horse is that she was an actual secret weapon, and her comrades feared that to speak of her power would make her a target. Faced with arrest and forcible relocation, Victorio led a guerrilla war, fought many battles and skirmishes with the United States Army, and raided several settlements until the Mexican Army killed him and most of his warriors in October 1880 in the Battle of Tres Castillos. Her brother killed in battle, a distraught Lozen rejoined Geronimo to exact her revenge in true warrior fashion, returning to the warpath quickly and purposefully. Lozen had epic power and courage, fought longer than Crazy Horse or Geronimo, and, as Alishire wrote, she fought more effectively than Custer, evaded a full one quarter of the United States Army. Lozen, the war shaman of the Apache, represents one of the most successful, respected, and influential woman warriors in history. Yet historians have almost entirely overlooked her remarkable life story. And there is the thread that weaves in and out of every episode of the Missing Witches podcast. We may be overlooked, but we will not be forgotten. Whether or not they know our names or acknowledge our contributions, they will live inside the world that we witches helped create. In fact, most of our names won't go down in history books, but we can be secret weapons, changing the world from the shadows and the light. Geronimo went on the run with 140 followers, including Lozen, after rumors began circulating that their leaders were to be imprisoned at Alcatraz Island. Lozen and another woman, Tadotze, began negotiating peace treaties. Self-described queer indigenous activist Aaron Wise, whom I quoted earlier, claims that Lozen and Tadotze were two spirits who were in love before being violently separated by colonization. And I applaud this take. Lozen never married, so it's comforting to think of her finding true love within a lifetime of war. Aaron wrote, "According to Christoso Apache, writing for the Kyla Folk Encyclopedia of Gay Folklife, Tadotze was also a warrior since her youth and, despite being married with children, spent a significant amount of time riding with Cochise's band against the current of Western expansion. Some years later, she joined Geronimo's band and rode alongside both him and Lozen. The American leaders dismissed them, but Lozen and Tadotze carried on with their attempts to negotiate. The rebels believed that they had a strong resolve until it was revealed that all the Chiricahuas had been rounded up and sent to Florida. If they wanted to rejoin their kin, the Ende needed to head east toward captivity. The warriors agreed to surrender and laid down their arms. 5 days later, they were on a train bound for Florida. Lozen was separated from Tadotze, taken into U.S. military custody as a prisoner of war and sent to Mount Vernon Barracks in Alabama. She never returned to her home and died in confinement of tuberculosis on June 17, 1889. At 49 years old, she had been fighting for almost literally her entire life. Sometimes I wonder about the high road, about negotiation and respectful discourse, agreements, concessions, compromises. And of course, these things are very good. But only when there is mutual trust and respect between the two parties. Lozen spent her final active years negotiating in good faith that the white eyes could show reason, compassion, a willingness to bend. But instead, she was imprisoned and infected. And we modern witches get a tiny echo of this feeling when we go out into the world seeking common ground and mutual benefit, only to find a regime that believes life is a zero-sum game, where there is a winner and a loser, and nothing in between. How do we reason with people who want to destroy us, who want us to lose? How do we compromise with a society that would rather we didn't exist? And a question that perhaps the earth spirits are asking themselves, how do we talk to those who won't listen? And I'm reminded of the world-shattering Stokely Carmichael quote that broke my heart and blew my mind the first time and every time I read it. Dr. King's policy was that nonviolence would achieve the gains for black people in the United States. His major assumption was that if you are nonviolent, if you suffer, your opponent will see your suffering and will be moved to change his heart. That's very good. He only made one fallacious assumption. In order for nonviolence to work, your opponent must have a conscience. The United States has none. I mean, I'm certainly not advocating for violence here, and I don't think Stokely was either. We're just asking, under these circumstances, what do we do? Lozen tried it both ways, the war path and the path of peaceful negotiation. And while it's tempting to feel like she failed at both, we can't. Because we don't know how many lives or maybe even generations she may have saved. What America might look like if she hadn't tried. What the future might look like if we don't try. Lozen could have, and we can, sit back and watch, or we can fight, educate, donate, celebrate, do something, anything. Anything is better than nothing at all. Lozen had powers that most of us don't, but we modern witches too have powers that Lozen did not. The internet has given us the possibility of a global voice. Feminist and civil rights leaders have secured us some modicum of self-determination, autonomy, and agency. It's better than nothing. We can organize the baby steps that will become the journey of 1,000 miles. It's better than nothing. And all the while, we have to keep in mind that a word like compromise has two meanings. One, a deal where both parties give a little and get a little in an effort to secure mutual benefit or agreement. And two, a lowering of one's standards or integrity. So we can see Lozen in her final years, and maybe ourselves as we negotiate our paths, as looking to compromise while simultaneously being very uncompromising. Such is the world of magic, right, witches? Contradictions without binaries at every turn. Here's another one. We can hear our human stories when we listen to non-human entities. We can learn about our humanity if we listen to the mountains and trees, get quiet, and listen to the wind and stream. Living in the woods has taught me so much about what it means to be a singular being while also a tiny part of a whole universe. It's hard to put into words, but I nurture my happiness just by noticing. I give what I can, try to reduce my harm. Know better, do better. It's better than nothing at all. So I want us to think of Lozen and her warrior spirit and go outside, city, suburb, or country, Everything is alive. Feel the life force. Stand and raise our hands, palms toward the eastern sky. Affirm our connection to the land. Turn slowly in a circle and feel the energy of the directions. Understand that places have power to shape thoughts and behaviors. Try to sense what messages the breeze and clouds and rocks and trees and sun are sending, knowing that it may take moments, years, or generations to learn their language, to feel their wisdom, the magic and spirit of places. Seek the wisdom that sits in places. Yearn for it so we might serve our people. The places will know we are listening. Make listening our superpower. Let's acknowledge and cultivate our forces of perception. Compromise without compromise. Let's steal horses and fight for the land and people and what we know is right. Dancing and singing Lozen's words all the while. This power is mine.
You must be a witch.
Season 6 of the Missing Witches podcast is sponsored in part by Foxglove Farm. Go to Foxglove Farm, that's farm with a PH, like pharmacy, .com and use offer code Missing Witches when you sign up for your monthly subscription box of witchy delights. And sponsored by listeners like you. You who join our Patreon and come to our coven meetings. You who buy our book, recommend it to your friends, and review it online. We thank you. And if you love this episode, tip us at paypal.me/missingwitches.